16th, 2006, at 1 p.m. Madam Secretary, may we have the roll call, please?
Commissioner Rose?
Here.
Commissioner Gibson?
Here.
Commissioner Rappa?
Here.
Commissioner Christie?
Here.
Chairman Mielsko?
Here. May you join me in the flag salute, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next is public comment period. You may speak. Thanks, Eric. You may speak about anything that is not on the other than what is on the agenda. If you wish to speak, fill out a speaker slip back at the door where you came in. I have one, Mr. Eric Greening.
Good afternoon. I'm Eric Greening. I'm glad to see all of you here at this unusual time, and I just want to let you know that 2 days ago, the County Board of Supervisors unanimously went on record in opposition to Proposition 90. Since the chain of advice travels from you to them, their action does not call on you to take any collective action, but individually as voters, you all need to be aware that should this measure pass, your entire commission would essentially become a vestigial organ. Due to the proposition's supposition that every property owner is entitled by right to the most financially lucrative, speculative future use of their land, regardless of public interest, you would be severely constrained in conditioning increases in valuation to property owners by subdivisions or upzoning with counterbalancing benefits and mitigations in the public interest. You would indeed be severely constrained in protecting the public health and safety, since many of the conditions of approval you solicit prevent contamination of our water supply, allow ingress by firefighters and safe egress by evacuees, allow maintenance of a safe non-gridlocked circulation system, and prevent our air quality from degrading to the point where asthma becomes epidemic and children have to be forbidden to play outside on bad days. You would also lose any assurance that road and water projects and other public works mitigations you have assumed would be remedying project impacts would actually happen on schedule or at all, since skyrocketing right-of-way costs would probably lead to their delay or cancellation. Proposition 90 is not an initiative created by the California citizens, but the invention of out-of-state special interests with a nationwide mission to exalt private speculation above the public interest. I ask you to join the unanimous vote of our supervisors, CSAC, the League of Cities, the League of Women Voters, and many other reputable organizations in opposing Proposition 90 and in spreading the word. Thank you.
Thank you. Anyone else wish to speak? If not, I'll bring it back to the commission. And next is planning staff updates. Mr. Hogue.
Mr. Chair, if I could, I just very, very briefly, in case people were scratching their head when Mr. Greening was testifying over Prop 90, the pro-Prop 90 campaign has been very deceptive in that it's been focusing on the eminent domain portion of the initiative, which, a lot of us probably would support. The problem is that there's this poison pill that's hidden and deeply embedded in Prop 90 that really is the purpose of Prop 90, and that is the regulatory compensation piece that Eric was speaking about. So if people were thinking, Prop 90, that's about eminent domain, what's he talking about? Well, Eric's talking about really what the heart of that initiative is, and it is a historic coalition that's opposing that. I mean, when the Farm Bureau and the California Realtors Association and the League of Cities and CSAC join the Sierra Club and the Coastal Commission and the Planning and Conservation League and dozens, if not Chamber of Commerce, dozens, if not hundreds, of reputable organizations from all across the spectrum have joined to oppose this bill. It is probably the single greatest threat to California that we've ever faced in our voting lifetime. I understand that we can't take a collective action today, but I really would urge everyone who's listening to this meeting today to oppose Proposition 90. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Planning staff updates, Mr. Hogue.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Warren Hogue, Department of Planning and Building. The first update that I have for you is that placed in front of your chairs before the start of the meeting was a memo from me about transmitting ethics training information. This is the training that's required by AB 1234, and what I've given you is the information that we know to date. Indicates the dates that the training sessions that you need to participate in are going to be held. We're still waiting to hear final word on the times of the two sessions that are on November 2nd. But one will be in the morning and one will be in the afternoon, and they're 2 hours each, and you only have to go to one. And then the other one's on December 13th. We transmitted some information that you might have been given before that council had prepared, and then some additional information on meeting the requirement by doing a self-assessment test. So you asked us to bring this information to you as soon as we had it. I may have some more for you shortly if we get a follow-up packet of information from County Council that we'll forward on to you as appropriate. But I wanted you to get these dates down and know what you had in front of you.
Go ahead, Bob.
And I thank you for that. But I on the self-assessment test, it's got me concerned. Going to cost me $50.
Well, I need to have a conversation with the assistant director about that. It could be that that's something that would come under a department reimbursement.
But I presume if I attend the training, I won't have to pay.
No.
Okay. Thank you.
Depends what your time's worth.
All right. So
the training sessions do not require any kind of admittance fee.
Okay, so as soon as you know the times, you'll get them to us so we can let you know which one we want to attend.
Right. It's not as important for November 2nd, but if you can't make November 2nd, you're thinking of going December 13th, it's critical I know that as soon as possible because we're sharing that session with city bodies. And so it'll be in this room, so space will be at a premium.
All right, do we sign up for November 2nd or just show up?
I believe you just show up, unless, Jim, you have some additional information.
No, I don't.
If you know you want to go November 2nd morning or afternoon, you might let me know so that if it does turn out sign-ups are required, I can do it for you.
Okay. All right.
Or Ellie, myself or Ellie.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. The next thing I wanted to mention on staff updates was that on last Tuesday, the board took final action to approve the Freeman car lot in Oceano. That was a CUP that your commission had considered and had recommended or had acted to deny, and that action was appealed to the board. The board took tentative action to uphold the appeal but wanted several performance standards included in the conditions, and the board went ahead and finalized that approval yesterday, and those conditions require significant upgrades to the appearance of the outdoor lot and requires a five-year review that can come back to your commission to determine if the use is still compatible and could result and a termination of the use if you determine that it isn't. So I just wanted you to know the details of that. The other actions that they took that were items that your commission had seen is the four ag preserves that you saw at your last meeting were all approved by the board.
Mm-hmm. All right.
And if you'd like, Mr. Chairman, I can use that as a segue to the consent agenda.
Yes, we received those on Monday, and I was just curious whether they were advertised 72 hours ahead for the public.
Short answer is yes. All legal requirements have been met.
All right.
I can give you some more if you want, but
short is fine.
Okay.
Lying on your testimony, Mr. Hogue.
All right. Is that it, Mr. Hogue?
That's it for me.
All right. Thank you. That then leads us into the next item, which is consent agenda. Anyone from the audience wish to speak on any item on the consent?
Eric Greening, and I admit I was rather blindsided by these. Were hard copies available in the agenda packet that was that's over in the planning department for 72 hours of the staff reports on these items? Because I do have a, I guess my first question is whether it's urgent that these be acted on. I reviewed the packet, I guess, last Friday and wasn't aware that I needed to check because this doesn't usually happen. I'm kind of aware of the cycle of pink sheets for the County Board of Supervisors, but the phenomenon is fairly rare here, and I haven't developed the reflex of checking just before your meetings to see what's coming. So was the members of the public in good faith who checked within 72 hours? Did they know this was coming, and did they have the background information available?
And before you answer, I might note that I checked on the web site, and they were not on there yesterday.
In that case, I would strongly encourage you not to act on these unless there's some finding that you need to make that they're urgent, simply because members of the public have no idea they're being discussed. Thank you.
Mr. Hogue, can you help us on this?
The legal requirement was is that the added items be posted with the agenda at least 72 hours in advance in three public places. That was done. The public would have received notice of those added items by those agendas, and if they had approached the records management section, they would have been given copies of the reports to look at. Were they placed in the agenda packet that Eric looked at the prior Friday? No, they weren't available till Monday morning.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
And let me ask, and maybe Mr. Waller would have a comment. Is it necessary that these be acted on today?
I can address that in a short answer again as yes, and I can give you the long answer if you want it.
Okay, I'll assume that there's a schedule headed to the Board of Supervisors that's necessary. That being the case, Mr. Chairman.
I was going to check with County Council. Are you satisfied that all the legal requirements have been met?
Yes.
That we can go ahead?
Yes.
All right.
My understanding is there's a notice public hearing scheduled before the Board of Supervisors.
Oh. Correct.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Anyone else from the public on the consent agenda? If not, I'll bring it back to the commission.
What I'd like to do, Mr. Chairman, is pull item number 3 among these 3 for separate vote and have a question of Mr. Waller on item 1.
Which one was 3? Give me
that's the Ruggles.
Ruggles, okay.
Which one is it?
It's the third, the bottom of the pink sheet, request by Brian Ruggles to establish an ag preserve to enable the applicant, et cetera,
okay.
Et cetera.
All right, is there a second to pull that one?
Second.
It's been moved and seconded.
I don't think we need to vote on that. If somebody wants a separate vote, we just let them, don't we?
Well, we're already
there. We'll make a motion to on 1 and 2 here and see if that goes. In reading the staff report on number 1, Terry, the question, there was some question. I'm looking at page 3 of the staff report, which is essentially the minutes of the Ag Preserve Review Committee, where Irv McMillan questions how the parcels were created, states his concerns with 2 parcels being conveyed under program with staff responding. And I guess my question is, looking at the setup of the addition to this preserve and contract, can the parcels being added be conveyed separately, or are they now forever tied to the existing contract for the life of that contract?
Terry Waller, planning staff. With the addition of this property to the contract, approval by the Board of Supervisors, they would be under a 320-acre minimum parcel size, so it would be effectively merged during the term of the contract.
Right. And the total of that, the total of the contract right now is how much?
The existing contract size is 504 acres.
Okay, so it would not reach 640, so the entire contract could not be conveyed other than in total.
That is correct.
Okay. Mm-hmm. That was my question there.
Yeah. These were BLM parcels that were purchased. Just that's the way the government disposes of the property as a parcel. Then they convey it out. It wasn't an attempt by the property owner to have additional parcels.
Right, particularly. Right. No. It was just that. Knowing the intricacies, or actually not remembering all the intricacies of the rules of procedure, I want to just be sure that that was the case.
Mr. Chair, I would move approval of the AGP 2005-0024 and AGP 2006-0002.
Second.
So that's which one?
One and two.
One and two. All right. Is there a second?
Yes.
I moved and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? So carried.
And then I'd like to consider number three separately because going through, again, the minutes of a couple things that I noticed. One is that there was some question as to whether this parcel actually would meet the minimums of rangeland adequately suited for grazing, and it looks like after reconsideration there was sort of a if you'll excuse me, a nickel and dime attempt. It's sort of like searching for change in the couch when you want to buy something to find enough acreage that actually had appropriate classification or had adequate capability to qualify 100 acres there. And I'd be interested in a little bit of a background on that. And the other thing that did concern me is that I saw in the minutes that the representative of the Ag Commissioner's Office actually voted to oppose this, and I'm a little bit concerned going forward making a recommendation with our Ag Commissioner's Office not necessarily thinking this one's a good one. So if you could comment on first the reconsideration of the actual rangeland and second the position of the Ag Commissioner's Office.
Certainly. It is our practice to pre-review applications that come in. They come in by telephone or by a meeting, and we do a soils evaluation prior to them submitting an application to save them the inconvenience, should they not qualify, of filing fees and filling out an application. We do that as a courtesy to our clients. Some projects or applications are closer to the margin and qualifying than others. Every year there's a few of these that are closer than others that we evaluate. In this case, and it is our common practice to have the Resource Conservation Service perform a field survey, which is a more detailed review and more comprehensive than the one we can do using our GIS-based soils data. It's more precise to do it that way. In this case, we learned this year that they no longer perform that service due to budgetary and staffing constraints. And so the only option was to have a rangeland specialist go and perform that function, which he did. And we felt that after reviewing the information that he provided that his arguments were, and the evidence that he presented, was credible, and we recommended to the APRC in favor of it. However, on the part of some members, there is, concern about 100 acres being sufficient for rangeland parcels in any event. And so when it came to a property that was this close to the margin, I believe that is the reason why there was a no vote in that case.
And I guess the question, I couldn't quite gather from the report and lacking a really detailed map, I couldn't tell that the extra acreage found by the rangeland specialist, is that little patches of soil types that support adequate rangeland, or is that some larger contiguous pieces? I mean, I'm trying to get a sense of the quality. It did seem to be right on the borderline, and the Ag Commissioner's Office voting against it really stood out in my...
Your concern. There's basically three reasons why we felt it was okay. Number one, the overall acreage was understated when it was initially applied for, and there's an additional acre and a half of property based on a survey, which is as accurate as we can get. Then there was also a complex of soils that I frankly overlooked in my evaluation of the soils, and it's made up of a number of different soil types, actually, in a complex.
Right.
And he was able to identify the more favorable soil type is being more present on the site than we had realized. So basically, when you have a group of different soil types and one of them would let you qualify and the other wouldn't, there's a balancing between the poorly suited and the moderately well-suited. And in this case, we were convinced that there was probably close to 11 additional acres of land that would be well-suited as range land. The third point that he made, which was we also found to be credible, was that the boundaries of the soil complexes that show on our GIS map are not perfectly accurate. They actually aren't perfectly accurate when it comes to the hard copy maps that were prepared years and years ago. And so a site-level evaluation is really the best way to identify the boundaries and margins of these various soil types based on vegetation, terrain, rock outcropping, and all that sort of thing. So those were the reasons why we felt we could recommend to the APRC in favor of the application and the reason why it received a favorable vote overall.
You know, any way you slice it, this is a marginal property. I mean, I think even the votes in support of it would agree that it's marginal grazing land. It's steep, it's brushy, it's thin soil. It's not what I think of when I think of good places to raise cattle or other foraging livestock. What are the upsides versus the downsides of approving this request or denying it?
Well, it would be one more property that would not make it into the program, and there is adjoining land in contract. I believe it's to the west of this property, and so when you look at it overall, it's probably desirable to have even increments of individual property making up a larger group of properties that's all in the ag preserve and a contract.
Are we setting a precedent? Are we going down a new road for approving land applications of this type of land? I mean, are we going to see a proliferation of very marginal properties coming forward to make use of the program? And again, the reason I'm asking is because it's always a very iffy situation in Sacramento in terms of continuing to appropriate enough money to keep this program going statewide. And I don't think we should be doing anything that's going to be undermining the intent of the program by having a lot of the money being funneled to marginally agriculturally viable properties.
I appreciate and understand your concerns. No, I don't think so. I don't think we're setting a precedent at all. We have a few ones that are closer to the boundary every year. Last year we had a couple that were close, and we always are, happier when we have larger blocks of land for range land. But in fact, the rules that are adopted currently allow 100 acres as the minimum requirement. So,
and those rules are being revised, as I understand, from our
yes,
last
they
meeting?
Are. We're in the process of looking at revisions to them, which may cast a different pallor on the whole issue.
And I'm just about done, but real quickly, how many acres finally were determined to be moderately to well-suited?
Let me see if I have that right here. Well, I would say just I thought we had a figure in there, but I guess we don't. It basically would be 112 acres, 112.5 acres, based on the additional research that was done by the rangeland specialists.
And again, just I hate to beat this to death, but I've labored many years on the APRC. And are those extra acres contiguous, or are they patchy?
No, they're all part of those the soils profiles. So they're just the soils profiles, the polygons, if you were, are actually larger than we thought they were, is what it amounts to.
Okay.
And the overall parcel, overall parcel's a bit larger.
Okay.
And according to the staff report, it's now being used to graze cattle, and that has been an ongoing operation. And would you have any idea how many head are?
I don't have the number of head actually identified here in the staff report. Let me double check.
Okay, you. It's not important. But has this been an ongoing operation over a few years?
That is our understanding, that it's been a rangeland parcel off and on for years.
Thank you.
As others in the area have.
All right. What's the commission wishes?
Move approval of County File Number 2006-3, which is the Ruggles Ag Preserve.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Ready for the question? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Reluctantly.
Opposed? So carried. All right. That gets us to item one. I just want to mention that for the all the items, staff reports are over here on my left. There's several of them there. You can review if you wish. Speaker slips are in the back where you came in. And Madam Secretary, may we have item number one announced, please?
Item number one, hearing to consider a request by Wayne Culmer, Toad Creek Villas, for a vesting tract map, tract 2763, and conditional use permit to subdivide an approximately 6.78 acre parcel into 26 clustered residential lots, which range in size from 3,666 to 5,998 square feet. It's in the Salinas River planning area. County file number SUB 2005-00036, Supervisorial District 1, Josh LeBombard, Project Manager.
Before we start, I need to mention that I met out at the site with Mr. Comer this last Monday for about 30 minutes to review the site.
I also met with Mr. Comer.
As did I. Well, it wasn't Monday. It
was, we all weren't together, though.
We were all not together. It was a separate day.
Is that it? All right.
Josh Lombard, Planning Staff. Good afternoon. Once again, this is a request to subdivide an approximately 6.78 acres parcel into 26 clustered parcels. The lots will range in size from approximately 3,670 square feet to approximately 6,000 square feet each. And there is an open space parcel that's incorporated as part of this, and that's approximately 3.1 acres. The site is located in the residential single-family land use category, as you can see here on the map in front of you. And it's located at the current western terminus of Salinas Avenue, as you can see on this location map. This aerial image of the site depicts that there is a fairly substantial amount of oak woodland on the southern part and northeastern part of the site, and there's the remaining portion of the site is currently undeveloped. This is a photo of the site. I think we're looking toward the east on right now. Yeah, the east of the site. And this here, we're looking towards the residences down towards the south. The project description, being that it's a conditional use permit and a cluster subdivision, it also includes the development of 26 single-family residences on the parcels. And this is a site plan showing that it is a cluster subdivision, so we've managed to minimize development and impacts to the oak woodlands on the site by clustering the residential lots within the center of the site.
Mr. LeBombard, before you leave that, where's the open space parcel on that?
It's kind of cropped out of this one only because I tried to fit mostly the site plan. The open space parcel wraps around here. This cursor is a little screwy. It's around here on the northern end right here and all along here. There's a north fork of Toad Creek and then Toad Creek's down here on the southern part. So it wraps around all around here. Right here are the residential elevations proposed. There are two types of residences that are proposed with various different types of facades. And since this is going to be visible from Highway 101, we did request a photo simulation. And as you can see here, it will be visible. There's a sound wall on the property, and that's going to be vegetated. And also, there's going to be a berm built up in front of it to minimize the amount that's visible from Highway 101.
Excuse me, the berm will be where?
The berm is actually built up in the front of the wall right here, so that at the maximum, there's only going to be 5 feet that's visible. The wall itself, I believe, is around 11 feet at its max height. However, they're building the berm up in front of that, so you can only see from the highway 5 feet of the wall. It also has a simulated rock face, as you can see here, too, to make it look as natural as possible.
Yeah, I can give you
The project also includes off-site road improvements to Salinas Avenue. I was just showing you a shot down Salinas Avenue. The site actually here is here at the terminus. And the project also includes an improvement of the Toad Creek crossing, the Salinas River or Salinas Avenue crossing of Toad Creek. That's on the project. Currently, right now, it's kind of what we would call an Arizona crossing.
And that's going to be improved how particularly?
It's going to be widened. Let me see if there's if I included any plans here. And it's also in our conditions. It's going to be widened, I believe, to 18 feet, and there's going to be a pedestrian walkway on that as well. So it's going to be bridged, essentially, as opposed to the Arizona crossing.
And that was a question I couldn't sort of discern from the staff report. Will there be an actual physical bridge, or is it just going to be a bigger culvert with a wider?
Commissioner Christie, perhaps I can help. The existing configuration is what we also call a low water crossing. Literally, the water just flows over the surface. It's going to be replaced, as I recall from the drainage report, with a box culvert. Water will flow under the road instead of over.
Okay, so there's no culvert under that lighter colored area now?
No.
Correct. Does that answer your question?
Thank you.
Okay. Thanks, Richard. Staff's recommendation is that you adopt the mitigated negative declaration in accordance with CEQA and approve the vesting tentative tract map based on the findings listed in Exhibit A and C and the conditions in B and D, and I'm here for any questions that you may have.
Mr. Ruth, it's in your district. Any questions?
Sure. First off, I'd like to compliment staff's analysis of the Templeton design guidelines. I like that he put out what they were and how the thing met those guidelines or the significant cases. One minor item on page 120, Exhibit B, that really should be Exhibit D. Otherwise, we're going to have two Exhibit Bs. And the box culvert, and you said there's going to be a pedestrian bridge across that. Could somebody describe it? And I'm concerned about how we keep the cars away from the people, or is it just going to be wide enough for both? Or
the road across the top of the box culvert will look like a road with a sidewalk, just a curb and a sidewalk to one side. Yeah.
But maybe bridge was an inaccurate statement, I think.
Okay. Box culvert is a technical term, and I apologize if it's overly geeky.
Clear to me.
It's clear to me, and I just wanted to make sure the people had somewhere to go. And on page 149 of the environmental impact or the negative declaration, you're talking about the impact on geology and soils, and the Arizona crossing is now going to be a box culvert. It'll need to be inspected twice a year to ensure it has maintained its capacity. Who does that?
That'll be the responsibility of the homeowners. This is beyond the end of the county maintained road, and it will be the responsibility of the private property owners.
Okay. And then there's another issue, and I was talking to Mr. Culmer, and he said there's some soil that needs to leave the site and go elsewhere, which I don't know where that'll be, but obviously it'll have to go down Salinas Street. And so we're talking big trucks, and it's not perfect today. I suggest it would be less than perfect after the big trucks get through using it. What happens if the big trucks really mess it up? Do we have a way that who ruined the road can fix it?
Yes, we would monitor that as a function of our encroachment permit process and require the repair of any damage that's directly attributable to the construction activity.
Encroachment permit? He's just going to haul some dirt down a public road.
But they'll also be constructing improvements attaching to the end of the public road, and that'll require the permit.
So you've got the conditions in place. You'll inspect it before and after and make some determination. And if Mr. and Mrs. Citizen wanted to talk to you about that?
They're welcome to give us a call.
Okay. That's it for now. Thank you.
Okay. Any others?
Looking on page 1-18, and we just, Commissioner Roos just asked about that under the covenants, conditions, and restrictions. There are 1, 2, 3, 4 5, pardon me. I don't see the box culvert, as you called it.
Well,
there is that.
Sure.
Is that contained in A?
I would say it's actually contained within C. It's a function of one of the local streets within the subdivision.
Okay.
But if you're more comfortable, we certainly can spell it out more.
No,
I think that'd be a good point, because if somebody buys that and they're running the homeowners association, and somebody might say, "What do we got to do that for?"
Sure.
Richard's got money. Let him do it.
Okay, that's something the applicant can address, but I just, you think that it could maybe be enhanced with some additional wording in C?
I would simply add to the end of the sentence, including
C,
the box C. Culvert at the entrance.
Okay.
Because it's worthy of note that there are box culverts across Florence Street that are getting clogged up.
Well, Florence is a county street, isn't it?
It is indeed.
Right.
We may want to be a little more specific and say maintenance of the box culvert, including inspection twice a year to ensure that it can maintain its capacity, so that it's clear to the Homeowners Association they're taking on that duty.
Right.
All right. Any other questions?
Go ahead.
Yeah. If you could, on the aerial photo or parcel map, just give me a general idea of, give us a general idea of the 100-year flood plain, flood line? Or is that on maybe even on the, there should be a one of your parcel configurations?
Okay, the 100-year flood zone, actually, on this property, it's only on the southern portion of the site. It looks like it just comes in here, and it's within the boundaries of the riparian.
So it's within the...
So it doesn't extend past the actual vegetation itself.
Okay. And so is there, and I should know this, but there's conditions that the subdivided parcels are going to be clear of that? All of the parcels are all clear of that 100-year floodplain?
The language mostly speaks to staying out of the riparian, and I think by staying out of the riparian, as we've seen, that's automatically going to take you outside of the flood hazard area.
Which means staying away from the drip line of the edge of the oak woodland there?
Correct.
We worked
hard with the applicant to actually get all the development, including grading, temporary grading, as much as possible out of the drip lines.
So no disturbance under the drip line of any of those oaks?
There will be a little bit, and I've outlined it specifically on a couple of the parcels, and that's just by putting in some of the retaining walls on some of the parcels, and it's mostly on the northeastern side. And we've definitely outlined it specifically as which lots can affect the drip lines, and we've definitely minimized it as much as possible.
Okay. I have a question about the length of this cul-de-sac and the fire access and so forth. I'm going to hold that till after we hear from the public, please.
Mm-hmm. I've got a couple questions. The letter from the Parks Department had no comments other than requiring Quimby fees. But my understanding is there are existing there are trails on this property that the community currently is using. So... and I thought that there was some mention of a trail in this area in the Templeton design plan, although I didn't, consult it for a cross-reference. There was some mention in the staff report of a trail being provided, but I'm wondering if staff can kind of elaborate a little bit more on where the trail will be, who will have access to it, how it will be developed, if at all, et cetera.
I believe the applicant can probably speak to this a little bit better than I can. But what we did originally was work with the applicant to try to get a trail on that site there, because that's the old abandoned portion of the Templeton Park Road. However, looking at the configuration of that and during the environmental review process, looking at what it would take to actually improve that to be a walkable trail accessible to the public, we were talking about disturbance to the riparian vegetation there, encroachment onto or close to the Toad Creek there. So we decided to take it away as an actual public formal trail and maintain and keep it as an informal trail, so it's not addressed specifically.
Well, what does that mean, an informal trail versus a formal trail? What does that mean?
Well, because when we referred it to our Parks Department, they didn't come back and say that was part of the formal trail plan. We didn't push forward and require the the developer to construct that trail. And like I said, when we looked
but
at the...
But it's pre-existing in some form.
It's a pre-existing informal trail. It's not a formal trail as maintained by the Parks Department or any entity. People do walk on it, I believe. And when I went out to the site, it looks like, you know, there has been a little bit of clearing as far as, you know, people walking and maintaining a certain pathway. But when getting to the environmental review process, we didn't feel that because the Parks Department didn't require it, that we would go forth and require it as a formal public trail.
Well, I'm just concerned about protecting that historic public access to that site. If there's no formal mention of it here, if there's not at least an easement being recorded or some kind of acknowledgement that that informal but historic public access will continue, I'm a little concerned that's going to be lost. So maybe when this comes back to us, we can talk about that a little further.
Just a little more information in that vein. The Templeton Community Design Plan, not in the guidelines section, but in the front, talking about the Toad Creek watershed, speaks to developments should, and I can't think of the exact words, but it's something to the effect, you know, have a trail system there.
Yeah.
And I talked about that with the applicant when I was there, and I'm sure he'll refresh our conversation. That used to exist as a public road, but it got given up a long time ago, and probably wasn't really a good idea because it's a flat, nice road, very tree-shaded, just a beautiful area back in there. However, now to get to it, you got to trespass against a whole bunch of people's property. But there's always the possibility if somebody wants to apply to some grant somewhere that this could be, they could perhaps get an easement. Especially from the people whose property lies up the hill. I'm sure they don't care much what goes on. The people who have property along Florence Avenue, they probably don't want to give up, you know, somebody walking through their backyard. But on the other side of the creek might be a good idea, but that's all just real might and maybe. And
is the other side of the creek part of this parcel?
I'm just going to put an aerial photo up right now because I think this shows the parcel configurations. I think.
Can you do the pointer as to where the existing informal trail is?
Somewhere along right through here. This is the abandoned portion of Templeton Park Road. As you can see, when it was put when it was abandoned, these four lots here actually acquired ownership of their portion of that road. I believe that these parcels didn't. So to be able to put a formal trail through there, we'd have to obviously GPS or somehow get the location of this trail in relation to these parcels here. And if necessary, then you'd have to get easements from those owners on those four pieces of property to be able to.
This is just such a classic illustration of why we should not be treating these road abandonments so cavalierly, because what looks like a basically a non-issue to us today 10, 15, 20 years from now can turn out to be a really significant impediment to good planning.
I'm intrigued, and I don't want, excuse me, but I didn't want to leave this Toad Creek thing. I'm intrigued by the little line against the four properties you said that did accept. It looks like they took their half of the roadway, but the uphill property, those are people that are down at the bottom of that screen there, they didn't.
I don't know the history of it, but I would say looking at the parcel map that would be the case.
Which
but
then makes this, how does that work? If the county has abandoned it, but no one took it, what if Mr. and Mrs. Citizen walk on it?
It could very well be that it is a part of those lots. When a road is abandoned, half of it goes to one side and half of it goes to the other. It just may be that our parcel layer on our photo mapper doesn't reflect that. It would require quite a bit of research to try and figure out what was happening there, and then also further out why that's not showing or not appearing to show as abandoned.
I guess my thought in looking Mr. Marshall's GIS, he has the bigger picture here, and there's looks to me to be potential pedestrian connection to areas mm-hmm. to the south off the bottom of this. I would suggest to my colleagues we bring this back for some discussion after we've heard from applicant and the public.
Before we go to the public, a few more questions. The total of 9 coast live oak trees that are going to be impacted or removed are in which location?
Where are you referring to in the staff report? I thought it was only actually 5.
Well, I'm reading on page 11 of the sensitive species and habitat survey that was performed by LFR, which says a total of 9 coast live oak trees occur within the disturbance area. Of these, 5 are considered mature.
Some of us don't even have this.
That's a different one. That's the red-legged frog survey.
Oh.
I think these were sent to me because, and I wanted to thank staff for that, because I had mentioned earlier that I wanted to read all the biological reports. So
I guess I would ask that when something goes to one, it comes to all, because it's kind of unfair to have commissioners reading from things that others haven't even had.
I think that'd be great. I think other commissioners had indicated that they didn't want to read the biological studies, but I think it would be great if they went to every commissioner as a matter of course. I think that'd be a good idea.
Okay, that just means that when we request biologic reports from applicants, that we're requesting 10 copies as opposed to 2 or 3 right now. If that's what your commission wishes, we can do that. It's just that means that, you know, we're getting a substantial amount of paper from
our commission agents. In the past specifically did tell staff only to send.
I think
they can train great little nuggets of information.
The RF reports to Commissioner Rose.
Maybe they can just be on file, and we can.
Okay. They are always on file. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I think that simple notification of the rest of the commission that one commissioner has asked, leave it to each commissioner to decide what to do with that.
Agreed, because I don't want all that stuff.
Okay.
Some may do. And
I don't want your stuff, so that's fine with me.
I was going to say, I think the RF reports are more boring than the biological reports.
Oh, they're interesting.
All right.
You know, the...
Are we ready to go?
Well, no, so where are those 9 trees is the question.
The location, I'm not actually, I'm not sure specifically where they're located. I think the applicant might be able to speak to that a little bit better.
Okay. And then there was another statement in the biological report that, talking about sensitive plant species, and when they had done the survey, and noted that there were several species of sensitive plants that could occur in the area that would not have been identifiable when they did the survey, and they said a spring survey would be necessary to rule out these, you know, additional species. Was a spring survey done? And
it wasn't, but I think if you read on past that, it says that the biologists determined based on the soil characteristics, topography, and things like that, that the likelihood of that of those actual species being present on the site was very small. So a spring survey wasn't required based on the recommendation from the biologist in that case.
Okay.
All right.
I think that concludes my questions for now.
Okay. Then we'll go to the public, and the applicant is first.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and Planning Commissioners. My name is Wayne Colmer. I'm the applicant. I'd like to thank county staff and the Templeton Advisory Group for their assistance and ideas that helped us create a better plan. The 3.7 acres we propose to develop is located in the least sensitive areas of the property. If you look at the aerial photo, you can see it's in the brownish area, and we're staying out of the green areas that are the riparian habitat and the oak grove. 43% of our entire site will remain as open space. Clustering the land planning allowed us to avoid developing in the sensitive habitat areas, and it's a good plan. Our lot sizes are smaller than the surrounding lots, but the overall density of our project is similar to that of our neighbors. We've met with the Templeton Area Advisory Group on a number of occasions. As a result of their meeting and their input, the number of homes we propose was reduced from an initial 30 to 26. The street widths were reduced, and we reduced the heights and number of retaining walls within the development. Their advisory board voted 4-1 to approve our project. Their recommendations for development approval are rare. The 2 homeowners directly adjacent to our property support our development and have submitted letters of support. Could you turn to slide 10? page 10. The homes are architecturally designed to meet the Templeton Community Design Guidelines. The exteriors of our home have a ranch-style feel. Wood, rock, and earth-tone colors will be used to provide a street scene that's consistent with the design character of Old Templeton. We've met with Fire Chief O'Sullivan on a number of occasions. He's asked us to provide a fire access point at the end of our cul-de-sac for a staging area in the event of a brush fire to the Oak Woodland area. He's approved the street layout and the length of our cul-de-sac. This fire access point can also be used is planned to be used as a public access point to the Oak Woodland and trails and potential trails. Our streets, open space, and stormwater detention facilities will be owned and maintained by the Homeowners Association. The CCNRs will advise all the homeowners of their maintenance responsibilities. Our Salinas neighbors have a number of concerns related to our development. We have addressed their concerns as follows. They were concerned about drainage and runoff. Our stormwater improvements will be designed to regulate the rate of stormwater runoff from the development. On-site water will be directed to flow into two 10,000 cubic foot underground detention tanks. The discharge of stormwater from the tanks will be released into Toad Creek at a regulated rate based on county standards for stormwater detention. There will be no change in the 100-year water surface below as a result of our development. None of our houses sit in the floodplain area. We're well above it. Neighbors were concerned about traffic impacts by the development on Salinas and surrounding streets. The existing homes on Salinas generate little traffic. Salinas is a sleepy little street. The new development will increase traffic volumes, but the traffic on Salinas is still far below capacity. Our traffic engineer is here today to address any questions, but his conclusion is that there is adequate capacity within the existing streets to handle the additional traffic generated by our 26 homes without increasing the level of service on any of the surrounding streets to an unacceptable level. Safety concerns were raised about possible increased traffic speeds. Condition number 29 addresses this issue. It requires a traffic study by us 2 years after our occupancy to recommend traffic calming solutions and construction devices if traffic vehicle speeds increase to a point where traffic calming is necessary. A $10,000 bond is required to guarantee funding and our performance. We'll be constructing this box culvert to replace the existing Arizona crossing across Salinas. The box culvert will create an all-weather crossing over the North Fork of Toad Creek. During storms, the crossing is flooded with fast-moving water. It's unsafe. The box will make creek crossing safer. We'll make it safe. The construction of new box will be over an area that's already paved. If you turn to slide 12, Josh. 12.
Wait, what was that?
Could you go to page 12?
Sure.
I think it's the next one. The concrete area is the area where the box culvert is going to be constructed, and we should be able to fit the box within the existing paved area. So there will be little, if any, environmental impacts to the creek area as a result of our new construction. We're planning on building two floor plans. They range in size from 1,705 to 1,875 square feet. They're modest-sized houses by Templeton standards. The price of our homes will be lower than the median sales price in San Luis Obispo County. They will be significantly lower than sales prices of homes in the Templeton area. Our homes should provide needed housing for a segment of the market that has been priced out of new home buying. I would like the commission to add two conditions to the development approval to assure the community that the developer will fulfill his promises. The CC&R should include provisions to provide public access to the Homeowners Association open space. The hours for hauling dirt export should be restricted to non-peak hour traffic periods of 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. And that the CC&R should include provisions for maintaining the box culvert on Salinas. I hope that you'll approve this development. The cluster concept that we've used avoids development impacts in environmentally sensitive areas and locates the home construction in the less sensitive areas of the project. It's the type of development that should be encouraged. Our home sizes will provide moderately priced housing below the median price of new homes in the community. My consultants and I are available to answer any questions and would like the opportunity to respond to public comments if any. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions?
Sure. When we spoke, you said there was a significant amount of dirt that had to leave the site, and as where we parked, it looked like some non-native soil had been piled up there, perhaps as other Florence Street projects put it there or something. And you talked about providing a monitor so that the truckers were not expediting going down Salinas Avenue, but I didn't see that in the conditions. Could you describe what you had in mind? And
okay,
then
that was what I was asking for in an additional staff condition just to assure that I do what I said I was going to do. We're going to have approximately 12,000 cubic yards of export.
And that's how many trucks?
20. Lots of trucks.
About 120 at 10 yards to the 12,000? 1,200 trucks, I guess. 10 yards to a truck.
Yes.
20 yards for if you went truck.
There'll be about 1,200 trips.
Or
600. Approximately 2,000 yards of dirt on our site has been dumped illegally there over the past few years by people working on swimming pools and just having export from whatever construction they've done. It hasn't been monitored. What I propose to do is to limit truck traffic to non-peak hours, and to have one or two people monitoring truck speeds going down Salinas to make sure it's not too fast and to make sure they operate within those hours. And I'm proposing a condition that if, God forbid, something should happen to me and I'm not around, the developer who builds it would be obligated to fulfill my promises.
Okay.
Okay. And your traffic guy is available?
Yes, he is.
And a couple questions for him.
Okay.
Where'd he go?
Traffic person.
That's him.
I also have an answer to the tree question, Joe. So.
Well, go ahead and answer the tree question, Mark.
Maybe you could take...
My name's Larry Hale. I own Pinnacle Traffic Engineering, and I prepared the traffic study for the project.
And when I was at the Templeton Advisor Group, some neighbors were very concerned, and so it's obviously going to increase the traffic on Salinas. So I have several questions for you.
Sure.
One, how much traffic goes down Salinas now? How much is going to go when this project is complete? And what does that represent in terms of the old ABC road condition?
Currently, Salinas has about 200 vehicles per day on it, and the project will generate another 250, so it's going to a little over double, and the total build out traffic would still be less than 500 trips per day, which is about 25% of the lower level of service A, which is about 1200 cars a day, I believe.
Okay, thanks.
So it's still
yeah, it'll be well within the level of service A range.
Thank you.
And I had a circulation question, and I don't know if it's part of your study, but
sure.
What's the total length of that cul-de-sac to the end?
Currently, it's about 600 feet.
And that's within
the crossing.
That's within the acceptable range for. Does Templeton Fire work on the same standards the CDF does? I don't know the numbers.
No idea.
But my concern is that we've got a cul-de-sac going in there. It looks like there are quite a number of structures, densely packed. And I just wanted complete assurance that the fire safety issues were properly addressed there.
If you knew Chief O'Sullivan, you'd know.
I know that they are.
They are.
Okay. I guess my other, but related to that, I will take the distinguished gentlelady's word at that. But I guess the other question is, showing off the end of that cul-de-sac is a 10-foot emergency access easement to the open space. And I guess my question then is, then what? I mean, where does that?
I think that's for the wooded area.
He just wanted some place to park his fire trucks if there was a fire in that wooded, so, in that green area that
so
you
could
saw.
Actually get access still down in that area.
Okay. So I guess my question is, it doesn't have to connect to anything?
No.
It's actually, I think it's meant to be access for the brushed areas that are on the hillside. And, in fact, there have been two or three areas within that kind of corridor that there have been fires that I think they had a difficult time getting to.
Right, the one in the Tascadero by the Elks Club was a
actually
recent
one, I think, right in that area.
Okay.
I think they're interested in that.
The purpose was for firefighting access. The purpose was not a secondary access.
Right. Well, it's listed as a secondary emergency access. I can't.
The emergency access to that woodland.
Okay, and that was. What was the access to, and how? What was the thought of to how it would be used? Actually, can we get the aerial up again? So that access comes basically out of the middle of the base of that triangle, more or less.
You know, the one that had the cul-de-sac on it.
Yeah, show the. Yeah, if we could show
Let's
the.
Let's go to slide 9.
There. Okay. Right. So you got.
Point that.
So it's there shows right there is the emergency access, but again, that's just to get across through the tree. He's got to be kept clear through the trees.
It's just to park the fire trucks.
It's a firefighting access.
Okay, so they can get off the street and into the wild land if yes. They need to do something.
Right. I don't believe it's for access for this development per se, but it's for access into the Oakwood land.
Okay.
Okay.
Other traffic issues?
Any other questions of the applicant?
Traffic.
On the tree issue, we have an aerial photo that can show the trees that we're removing. And Greg McGowan can describe.
Mr. Commissioner and Planning Commissioners, my name is Greg McGowan. I'm a biologist with LFR. Hopefully a figure is about to come up here. Hopefully it wasn't confusing. There were nine oak trees mapped on the site, five of which exceeded the diameter at breast height that's regulated in the Coastal Protection Act or Live Oak Protection Act. The other ones range from about an inch and a half diameter to up to 4 inches in diameter. The five that are discussed with mitigation are, 5 inches in diameter and larger. Doesn't look like this is coming up too well here.
Not bad. That's worse.
Yeah. Well, maybe you guys can see better than I can. If you can see on your screens, there are some green circle trees and there are some purple circular trees.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Those two trees are oaks. The green ones are the large ones. That's correct where you're pointing. And the purple ones are the smaller ones, the seedlings.
So those are the ones that are coming up?
That's correct. Those are the trees that are to be removed.
In your opinion, is there any design modifications that could be made that would preserve any or all of those trees?
I've talked with Wayne. You'll see the three purple ones there that are sort of by the large tree that's off the site towards the freeway, those ones. Those are in backyards. I don't really know. I'm not a grading expert, so I don't know what you have to do the mass grading to make it work for the site. Simply on paper, yes, they're in the backyard, so it's conceivable that they could be protected. On the other hand, you're not talking about a major tree here. It's a couple inches in diameter. But
are those live oaks or valley oaks there?
Those are live oaks.
Okay, because live oaks go pretty quickly.
They can.
Yeah.
They're slow to grow, slow to die, but if water's present, that definitely helps.
Okay.
But they there's the potential for that. There's another one, I think. It's really hard for me to see on there. There's one that's right in the middle of a house. That one's probably not.
Right. Well, my thought is those ones in the backyard could even, I mean, if it was possible from a grading perspective, could be significant amenities to those individual parcels as well, and if it's possible to save them.
I think they're dropping the height of the backyards to comply with the sound standards. Mm-hmm. So I think you'd probably be exposing the roots.
Is that, maybe the applicant could speak to that. Is that the situation there?
Two things are happening in that area. We have a sound wall along Highway 101, and the footing from the sound wall is going to impact the roots of those trees. And we are planning on putting and lowering the pad elevations, and there'll be some grading around those oak trees that will probably expose the roots of those trees. So they're going to be really difficult to save. If it's possible to save them, I'd like to save them too. But I don't think it's going to be likely.
Okay. Thank you.
All right.
There was one other item that I'd like to mention. I think the abandonment of that road was a mistake also. And at least as part of my CC&Rs or in the Homeowners Association deed, I'd like to provide an irrevocable offer to re-deed the property back to the county in some future date if they should ever decide they want it. So that way they don't have to deal with the Homeowners Association and the sign-off of 26 homeowners.
What about simply a presumably your open space parcel is going to have some sort of an easement over it, a you know conservation easement or some kind of instrument keeping it from developing, correct?
I hadn't planned it, but if it's required, yes.
Okay, because there's not going to be a house on it.
There will be an open space.
The interim period, the Homeowners Association is going to be required to have a public access easement on the open space property.
They are?
Yes.
Okay. And that's in the conditions where? Question to staff?
That isn't in the condition.
Okay. So that was your proposal. Condition. Perfect. Great. Just what I wanted to clarify. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions? If not, then we'll go to the public. Anyone else wish to speak on this item?
One.
All right, seeing no one else, applicant have any closing remarks? Or? All right, then bring it back to the commission.
I had a question for the staff, and as I was looking at the planning area standards, and I thought there was a scenic highway corridor standard that was part of the Salinas River Area Plan that got morphed into Chapter 9 of the LUO. And I had a hard time reading the map. So does this apply? And if it does, does it meet those requirements?
Again, short answers, yes and yes.
Okay.
Next.
And those maps are really, really hard to read. And it's actually a portion of the site that's within. And it clearly meets them. There's only one change, actually, staff would recommend to make that very, very clear. And that's on your page 1-13, condition 18. And this specifically addresses the screening. The words in the planning area standard use 80%. So we would recommend that instead of significant portions, you actually say
80%.
80%.
So just significant portions
becomes
parent 80%.
We'll screen 80%.
That's correct.
Of both the
sound wall and the new homes.
Got it.
With that, it complies 100% with those standards.
Okay. And I appreciate that. Now, has anybody been wading through the Templeton Design Plan and Toad Creek and that kind of thing? I think Ms. Christie and I will be going in the same direction. This looks like a good opportunity. And the applicant has offered some things that I think we should be going in that direction. And this looks like a wonderful opportunity someday to make something bigger so that informal access can be real, but we don't know. We can't design it today, but we want to make sure it's ready for tomorrow.
And I would ask for council's help on the idea of that the applicant brought up about granting something today so that we're not dealing with the Homeowners Association. I wasn't quite following that. I was hoping Jim could help out there. But to the CC&Rs, we can add that another page? Provision that access. Oh, I'm
Who's
sorry.
Page?
Page 1-18, condition 35, would be a new F. Access to and over the existing historical trail on the site shall not be impaired.
What about simply requiring, as the applicant suggested, a public access easement?
That's what I was going to suggest, an offer dedication of an easement. But you may want to add something to condition 17 to the open space easement area where I could put something in the additionally into the open space easement where the public could use that easement.
You know what I find kind of strange in this whole dialogue we're having is that we just finished the park and rec update. We have zero comment from the Parks Department, and there obviously were public meetings held in Templeton. Maybe our distinguished commissioner here went to some. Was this like people screaming to have this?
No. This is just a little neighborhood thing that...
An opportunity.
Yeah. It's an opportunity, right? You look down there, and I don't know, as you drove, just before you crossed that Florence Street Bridge, you look to the left there, it's just a beautiful little... shaded walkway, wide where the road used to be, and who knows.
And this is one of those points that was brought up during the Parks and Rec element that we just took action on, was that the trails in that plan were basically the floor, not the ceiling, and that we definitely, as a commission, had the discretion, if opportunities arose, to go above and beyond what was in that plan. So I think this is one of those.
We're putting up a couple of 2x4s here.
Just curious.
So, and again, I don't know if staff can get a wider view of the aerial shot of the area, but there's opportunity for pedestrian connection through what looks like fairly open territory to the south of this of this site. You know, all through this larger tan colored area, connecting up to some streets that might be as far down as the cursor was, all the way maybe even to the blue. And that just comes from a quick look at Richard's.
And the developer gets, additional parcels in exchange for giving back this open space parcel for public benefit.
Actually, they don't get additional parcels. They get
smaller parcel size. Right. Thank you for that correction.
If you wanted, you could actually just add to the end of condition 17 that the open space easement shall include provisions that the public have access to the historical trail located on the site.
That makes sense.
Just generic public access to the approval of County Council and the Parks Department. I mean, let's let them figure out the details on that.
And I was going to suggest that a 3B be added where the offer dedication is made.
3B on what page?
The prior page.
12.
12.
Oh, there you go.
And what would 3B say?
Richard, offer dedication of an access easement.
Well, you know, except I'm going to pick a nit here. There's a difference between an offer to access, an OTD, an offer to dedicate a public access easement, versus condition 17, which is simply requiring the recordation of an easement.
I was suggesting it be in both places so that that would be an offer that could be accepted by the board. It's
that's
on the
fine.
Map, though.
As long as it's in both places, that's fine.
Okay, one thing we haven't captured yet is the monitor and the hours of operation of the truck hauling.
You could
that the applicant suggested.
Add that as a condition. It would need to be in the conditional use permit conditions, which are now Exhibit D, beginning on page 1-20. And it would probably just be a new condition within these conditions. It would read, during construction of tract improvements and residences, truck traffic shall be limited from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
And a monitor, and the applicant shall provide a monitor to during truck traffic to ensure public safety.
Perfect.
And that's a new condition 31?
Sure.
Okay. And then the applicant had also suggested another condition relative to maintenance of the box culvert. Did staff have a preference on where that might go?
I think that was under the CCNR.
Yeah. You're right, yeah.
I think that aligned with what we had already discussed prior to his testimony.
Okay.
That would be added to 35C on page 18.
35D.
C.
C.
C. C is maintenance of all, and that's where you want it?
We added to the end
streets.
Of it some language, including the box culvert, including inspection of it twice per year,
yeah,
et cetera, as a feature of the local streets within the subdivision.
And that's, we have a new condition 35. I forgot what that was.
We do?
We do.
I made this note here, and I have nothing behind it.
We were talking about adding.
I was hoping somebody else could remember.
We had talked about adding an F under 35. Maybe that's what it was.
Yeah, we were going to add it to 35C.
For the public access, but then we decided to do that.
Yeah.
Okay. Elsewhere. All right.
Yeah.
Actually, your commission may want to still leave that F in. It notifies the property owners through CCNRs
that
they've got this
that's
thing
a good point.
That they can't impair or impair.
That's a good point. Notification is a good thing.
It's never bad to over-notify.
And did staff have some suggested language for that?
I think they read it to us.
Access to and over the existing historical trail on the site shall not be impaired.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah. Are we ready for through? Motion? Ready for a motion?
Yep. I think we are.
We adopt the negative declaration in accordance to the applicable provisions of CEQA and the Public Resources Code and approve vesting tentative tract map 2763 and conditional use permit based on the finding listed in exhibits A and C. And notice that the conditional use permit findings are really not exhibit A, they are exhibit C. And the conditions listed in exhibit B and D, and noting that the conditional use permit conditions are really D as in Delta, not D as
awfully
in Bravo.
Awfully long motion, but I'll second it.
Well, I'm not done yet.
Oh.
Okay.
Just beginning,
okay. And we changed a few conditions and summarizing on Exhibit B, the track map, that was 3B, the offer to dedicate, 17, 18, adding the 80%, 35C, adding the box culvert responsibilities, and 35F, the access, and in condition D, as in Delta, we had the new
1,989 square foot single family residence on slopes in excess of 30% in the North Coast planning area, county file number DRC 2005-00054 and 00055. Supervisorial District 2, Ryan Hostetter, Project Manager.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Ryan Hostetter, County Planning Staff. The project before you is a request by Mr. Rob Trask of Cambria to do an addition to his home. The addition will be 2,760 square feet. It will be added to his existing 1989 square foot single family home. This project is a variance, minor use permit, and coastal development permit all in one. The variance is required because we will be requesting development on 30% slopes or greater. It also requires a minor use permit because it's development within an environmentally sensitive habitat area in the coastal zone. The project is located approximately 1 mile northwest of the intersection of Highway 1 and Burton in Cambria. It's on Burton Circle, 2898 specifically, Burton Circle. It's within the residential single-family land use category. It's in the geologic study area. It's also within an environmentally sensitive habitat area due to the terrestrial habitat in the Cambria pine forest. This is an aerial photograph of the project site. There's an existing single-family home on the property. The proposed site plan shows an extension to the existing home, and the entire addition will be up on the portion of the property fronting Burton. This is a 3D rendering of what the existing single-family home looks like. And this is what it will look like after the proposed addition is constructed. It's built entirely on caissons. There will be minimal grading. I'll go through a couple floor plans. The lower floor shows additional bedrooms, office, closets, bathrooms. And the upper floor is a workshop for the an office for the owner. We'll go through quickly the elevations, which show the proposed addition and the existing house. This is the northern side. It's a downsloping lot from Burton. This is the view from the road. However, a portion of this you won't actually be able to physically see from the street because it's a pretty steeply sloping lot down from the road. So the cutoff visually is about where the bottom of the garage is from the street in this photo. Additional elevations, this is the south side. This is the side that the new elevation or the new addition will be located. And the rear of the house, the new portion is mostly on the right side. And the applicant is also going to be installing a retaining wall. It's entirely on his property. It's not in the right of way. He had a meeting with the Public Works Department on site because there's been some erosion in the past along Burton Circle. So as a part of his project, he's including putting in a retaining wall to help stabilize that area. And this is specifically that area where it gets eroded away and where he's going to put his retaining wall down here. You're not going to be able to see it from the road. This is where the addition will be located. This is next to his house. He has some little steps and ornamental vegetation in between the existing pine and oak trees. The project will remove two pine trees, and it will impact one pine and one oak tree. When we say impact, that means there will be development within 10 feet of the drip line of that tree. We also require replacement for impacted trees as well as removed trees. Removed pine trees are replaced at a 2-to-1 ratio. Impacted pine trees are replaced at a 1-to-1 ratio. Impacted oak trees are replaced at a 2-to-1 ratio. And another picture of where the addition will be. I'm going to quickly just go through the variance findings. Approval of this variance will not grant this property owner special privileges. There have been other variances approved for additions, specifically in this area on Ramsey. There was one approved in July of 2004. The property does have special circumstances, specifically topography, which limit the property owner's ability to construct on slope.
Just the caissons and the retaining wall before or after, something like that. And so what actually is going to be installed? I'm just trying to figure out what overall impact is going to be visited upon this site. And it's the drilling of the caissons, and then the purple areas are footings that connect them, or so it's an excavation to a certain depth and construction of a concrete wall?
There's a portion, a corner of the house on the it's the eastern side where it will be cutting in to the hillside slightly.
Just
and there
below
will be
the
some pouring. Right, there will be some pouring of a foundation there where you can see the solid concrete up there. Majority of it, though, is caissons. The applicant can also clarify that more specifically than I can.
Okay, and I guess what I'm trying to get at is once this construction's done, what's the nature of the surface underneath these caissons? I mean, I think it clearly has less impact than trying to site the house on a foundation sitting in the grade there. But what's going to be the nature of the material and the result underneath this, which appears to be perched over the existing grade?
At the end of the day, I think there will be hollow spaces underneath and large concrete pylons that you'll see going into the ground. And I think the portion that is closest to Burton Circle, you'll be able to see some foundation underneath. So it's really perched on top of the ground, and it's suspended, if you will, on top of the caissons. The caissons will be going into the ground. So there will be hollow areas underneath.
Okay. And I guess really where I'm headed with this, one of the things I'm very concerned about, because I know the community services district up there is very concerned about fire safety. And as I looked on a site visit, it's extraordinarily steep and fairly heavily wooded. And, you know, that cuts a couple of ways. It does help shield, you know, the woodedness of it, helps shield the visual impacts of this. But I know the applicant has referenced discussion with the fire chief up there, who is every bit as, shall we say, attentive to detail as what I hear of the Templeton fire chief. But I would hope the applicant would speak to the nature. I mean, it seems to me that with a suspended house and at the top, essentially halfway up the side of a steep, brushy, heavily wooded canyon, we have some fire issues, and I'd like to be assured that those have been properly addressed as we consider this. Beyond that, I wondered if there was any specific arborist's opinion that was in writing on the trees that were proposed to be removed. They're photographed as deformed and less than perfect specimens, but aren't we all? So it's I'd just be interested if there's any formal written material on that.
To answer your first question, Cambria Fire did review the project, and Mr. Putney was here, but he's not here at the moment. He has reviewed the project and has submitted a referral. And he doesn't have any objections to the proposed project. As far as the trees, we did a bio report, and I'm remembering it was for other species that we had found in the initial study that potentially could live within this area. But I don't believe we did a bio report specifically for the pines and the oaks. And the applicant can correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think we have one for that.
One last question, which is there was mentioned in the staff report or application about other unbuilt lots as to whether they are on the water wait list for the CCSD or not. And do we have an indication of which lots are still buildable within that area? And again, looking to assess the potential visual impacts of this structure toward unbuilt properties.
So let me make sure I have your question right. You want to know other unbuilt lots within this neighborhood,
right,
if they have the potential to be
built? Do you have an aerial that has the lotting pattern on it as well?
The property owner, I think, even owns there's a 25-foot along.
Yeah, I can see what you're doing, Ryan. That's
Sorry.
Perfectly clear to me. But,
here.
Yeah.
This 25-foot lot here. If there's a vacant lot up there currently and there isn't a water meter on it that is an approved grandfathered water meter, basically they cannot be built upon unless they're owned by a property owner that can merge them, if you will, with their property and do an addition to extend their own house. But they can't be built separately unless they have proof of water for that property.
Right.
So as far as which ones in this neighborhood have a water meter, I couldn't answer
that. You don't know
that
at that point. Okay, but I'd like to just possibly discuss with the applicant the merging of that.
At all, in a place like Cambria, of slopes greater than 30%, seems like kind of an oversight.
Matt Jansen, planning staff. This is one that we wrestle with quite often because, quite frankly, the ordinance and the LCP are silent
mm-hmm.
on this issue. And what we tell people initially is that if you have the ability to avoid development on 30%, you're not allowed to do it.
Mm-hmm.
But if we have a legal lot of record that is either mostly or entirely over 30% and we don't have the money to buy it, then we're left with only one choice, and that
right.
is the process of variance.
Sure. And I can understand there's constitutional issues perhaps involved, but it seems like if there are grading standards that must be implemented on slopes between 20 and 30, perhaps there are, you know, additional standards that should be implemented on slopes that are over 30, you know, with language acknowledging that if you can avoid building on a 30% plus slope that you must. So has staff given any thought to that?
Well, for the most part, most of those properties are identified and mapped in a geologic study area. And if in the case that they weren't, we'd still require the geologic report And we essentially, for lack of a better term, throw the book at them regarding mitigations to make sure that not only is the proposed structure going to be stable, but that there are no offsite impacts as a result long term. So, well, as far as we're concerned, that, you know, that we're kind of in uncharted territory, even though we've been there several times, and we we're
revisiting uncharted territory.
at least in our opinion, we take a fairly conservative tack, and we.
So. Well, the way that, you know, we've dealt with this over and over again in Cayucas and much of Cambria, basically, as I read the CZLUO, development on slopes greater percent is prohibited, grading or otherwise, except that if it's impossible to develop, then you have to go to the variance. And what we've seen is, as you say, the book, which is all the requirements of the 20% to 30% slope. Studies and engineering reports and all these things, plus in some cases bonding for performance, which is distinctly a possibility. So, you know, whereas if we could rewind the clock about 80 years and revisit how we developed Cambria, we'd do it differently. Unfortunately, we're stuck.
Well, in a case like this, though, we don't have a constitutional issue like we do with some of the other parcels in Cambria and Cayucas, because we already have a house and the applicant already has an economic use of the property. So, I mean, I just bring this up because, you know, the plan is still at the Coastal Commission and they're going to do whatever they're going to do. And if this was perhaps, I don't recall discussing this specifically when the Cambria plan came to us. So if this is something that staff maybe wants to discuss with Coastal staff in terms of their processing and just kind of flag it and maybe get their input or perspective or suggestions, because I'm sure that the Coastal Commission has dealt with this in other areas of the state. Might be a little value-added opportunity, that's all.
All right. More questions? Go ahead, Bob.
Sure, I had one. The way I see it, we're adding a couple of bedrooms and one bathroom, which denotes that there probably would be some more water usage. Is the Cambria Services District okay with that?
Yes, generally with additions, we require the applicant to supply a letter of approval from the CCSD, and the way the CCSD handles this is they generally have impact fees for additional fixtures, which has been the case with this project.
Thank you.
Is that it?
That's it.
All right. We'll go to the public then, and the applicant is first.
Hi, my name is Rob Trask, and I tried to cover, I don't have much to add beyond the points I tried to make in my written presentation, but if any of the commissioners didn't have time to read it, or at least the first four pages, I can go over the bullet points on that, but if you've read it, that would be repetitious, I suppose.
We read everything.
We appreciate your sensitivity.
Okay.
And I thank you for that. Those 3D pictures, which staff presented some of them, and I didn't understand it until I got those.
Okay. Yeah, that might be a little excessive, but it's probably the result of attending a lot of advisory council meetings, as Sarah
knows. They've trained you well.
Yeah, well, I guess it paid off, sort of, or maybe not. I don't know. Okay, so I won't bother going over the bullet points again. Regarding the fire safety, Chief Putney's here. He had to go to an OES meeting upstairs, and he said he'd try to come back if you had questions for him. But he also said he didn't have any fire concerns specific to my project. And it didn't sound like he's going to be long there, so if anybody really wants to talk to him, I think it could be.
I think we're conditioned, the proposal is conditioned on a fire safety plan and his sign.
So I have an opportunity to build a KIA cistern there, put a lid on it, you know, concrete lid. But I'm not sure if I can afford that or not. You
know. Does the CSD require sprinkling that structure?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, and Bob's been to the site, too. So.
When you say sprinkling, will it be sprinkling underneath? Because I'm, like, concerned about the fire coming up the hill when you have a bad year and you don't get to the poison oak.
Well, no, it's I keep it down, so that won't be an issue. It could be enclosed on the sides, which fire-wise would make sense to do, so that's a possibility. But
I think we can defer. As you say, in terms of diligence, the CSD Fire Department is extraordinary in terms of their attention to that detail, and I think the fire safety plan we'll address it adequately there.
Okay. Any other questions? No. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the public wish to speak on this project? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I have to tell you that you know, by reading the introduction to this, I have to say initially I was skeptical, to say the least. You know, 4,700-foot home on a steep lot like that, and in the middle of it, a significantly wooded pine forest, I could write down a list of potential impacts that were substantial. But I think, you know, actually in this case, the applicant has done an extremely thorough job in walking through those impacts and seeing that they are addressed. I think the caisson construction technique goes extremely light in a very difficult area. You know, I believe that the mitigation for the trees removed is going to be adequate. I believe the actual wooded nature of that lot is going to minimize the visual impacts, even to adjacent property owners. The bulk of this project is going to be below grade, and the retaining wall is an extremely important improvement to a piece of road that's starting to crumble. I was backing up during my site inspection and quite nearly put my left rear wheel over the edge there until I realized. But I think that's going to be good all the way around, and I'm ready to offer a motion at what point.
We're ready.
You all.
Go ahead.
Cool.
That being the case, I will move that we adopt the mitigated negative deck in accordance with the applicable provisions of CEQA and approve the variance minor use permit, coastal development permit, DRC 2005-00054, and DRC 2005-00055, based on the findings in Exhibit A and the conditions in Exhibit B.
Second.
Been moved and seconded. Any more discussion? If not, roll call, please.
Commissioner Gibson?
Yes.
Commissioner Rappa?
Yes.
Commissioner Christie?
Yes.
Commissioner Rose?
Yes.
Chairman Melskow?
Yes. It's 2:45. Do you want your break now, or do you want to take it a little later?
I wouldn't mind a break.
I wouldn't either.
Is that... We have consensus on that? Sure. All right, then we'll take a 15-minute break and before we start the next item.
I'm sorry, Gene, I almost took your kneecaps off there.